It's awesome, guys. We have one more storyteller tonight. Kind of the reason we're all here. She is the event sorceress of Soho House. Maybe we'll edit that out. Joey Stevenson! Woo! Event sorceress.
Hello, hello. Let me get situated here because I'm doing something very radically redundant, which is doing a slideshow presentation at a podcast. Yes. You are welcome, audience members. Okay, so I'm kind of the reason that you're here tonight in that I curate the events at Soho House. So we have been open 2.5, nearly 3 years, and we are just shy of 2,000 events in, which is kind of crazy. Kind of gives me shudders and jitters just thinking about that. So we asked Tana, we're doing a design month at the moment, and we asked Tana to be our first guest curator. So we said, do whatever the fuck you want. The whole weekend is yours. Do whatever you want. And he said, I would like to create this exhibition, which you'll see on the elevator doors, and kind of hidden around Soho House at the moment. And we also he also asked whether he could invite the Nerdalogs along to do some creative storytelling. I guess the story that I'm about to tell, and by the way, podcast listeners, there is a Mondrian slight style image with Michelle L'Amour, a famous burlesque superstar, and a dancer from Joffrey Ballet, who is the only person who can fit into the 23-inch waist Playboy Bunny vintage uniform that she's wearing up on the screen. You're going to have to bear with me because I'm going to have to talk through the imagery. So what I do as the event programmer here is I'm basically a magazine journalist, which is my past, but brought into the present. I try and unearth Chicago stories, tell them, celebrate them, like the Nerdalogs. And our two epic moments during each year is Halloween and New Year's. And so I've done everything from ask James Bond, not the spy James Bond, but the master projectionist who does all of Roger Ebert's movies when he was alive and who has set up pretty much every single vintage reel-to-reel projection setup in North America. We've gone to his secret private cinema, right through to curating an event with Camp Wonderwiga, which I'll tell you all about after the event if you want more details. But we've done something with them, done a pop-up up on the roof with vintage canoes and grass lawns up on the roof in our swimming pool here. Okay, so there's a lot of Playboy Bunny up on the screen. This is our staff. They all had to volunteer to wear this. But the thing that I wanted to talk to you about was why the hell I'm putting up lots of Playboy imagery. So like I said, one of our biggest events of the year is Halloween. And for Halloween 2015, one of the things that I decided that I would love to do as the event, and when I say the event, I mean all six stories of this building activated and telling different stories, was the birth of Playboy. So I love Chicago. We're not just Soho House, we're Soho House Chicago. So we try and unearth and really celebrate Chicago's stories. And so what we did for this one was tell not just Playboy, but the birth of Playboy, born in Chicago in the 1950s. So Playboy is obviously pretty protective about its logo and its name. So I asked Christy Hefner, daughter of Hugh, whether we could have their blessing to tell the birth story, the origin story of her father's empire, because we didn't want to get sued. And she was a sweetheart, and she enabled access to the full Playboy archives from the past, and also all of those Playboy Bunny outfits that you see on the screen behind me. It's actually one of the few patented uniforms in America. There's very few, including like army uniforms. The Playboy Bunny uniform is one of the few patented uniforms, and so they've never let anyone else apart from staff wear them ever. So these ones are a combination from the TV show and also from Playboy Club Miami from the late 70s. Next part of the story, everyone is seeing what is a giant grotto that we built up on our swimming pool roof. And it's got a waterfall entrance, and there's a very lovely couple of members in the front, and there's also in the top right-hand corner a very naked lady. So the result of all of this, the research, the request, was that we were trying to take all of the attendees to the party back in time to February 29, 1960. And this is when the first ever Playboy Club opened. So we recreated that first image that you saw, the kind of Mondrian-esque style awning. We had full access to the archives, so we took all of the original imagery and we turned it into the light boxes that were on the walls in the original Playboy Club Chicago. And we got super nerdy. I am very, very nerdy. We like forensically researched everything to do with the club. There was the welcome cocktail bar that we had downstairs. We recreated the magazine cover of the magazine that was published during the February 1960 when the club was open. Like, bartenders were wearing fuzzy bunny masks. The program for our event was the bunny manual, which all of the bunny mothers would follow and train Playboy staff. We recreated the font, the typeface, all of the illustrations hand-drawn by one of our amazing members here. We had like this legendary jazz saxophonist, Frank Catalano, who plays at Green Mill all the time, is in a band with Jimmy Chamberlain. He researched, again, forensically, the original playlists that were at the club. And, you know, just in a more general, it's a party, so it was fun. We did everything from Playboy bunnies, petting real bunnies, down in our gym and the boxing ring. There was a roller disco party. This image in the right-hand corner was a rather risque performance by Michelle L'Amour, and she was recreating the character of the Femlin, which is one of the illustrated characters that appeared on the front cover of the magazine, but also was on the dishware that Playboy served their food on in all of their clubs. We built this grotto. There was a lot of nudity. And possibly a lot more than nudity. So let's just say a lot of babies could have been made that night. Okay, so this is the lovely Christy Hefner in the turquoise nightdress. Everyone had to wear vintage 1960s pajamas. And then next to her on the left is her brother Cooper Hefner, both Hef's children. So actually, the lovely Tanner, my new close bud, he invited Christy to come here tonight and to speak, but unfortunately she already had a prior engagement. So I'm kind of secretly glad that she couldn't make it, because although I'm talking a lot about a party that we did, and I'm talking a lot about Playboy, the one thing, the reason why I wanted to talk about it was because I wanted to talk about her father. And if she was sat there in the audience in front of me, I would have been deeply mortified. Different podcast. But I would have felt really awkward talking about her father in front of daughter and also sort of like editor-in-chief of his magazine Empire at one point. So I know Christy is going to listen to this podcast after we're done. So hi, Christy. Thank you for making the party happen. You are a legendary human being. So I'm going to click forward one more slide. And we have actually an image from the magazine from the early 60s. So this is getting a little bit more into Tanner Woodford territory here. We have George Nelson, Wormley, Saarinen, Eames, all of the greats in furniture design here. So the one thing that I wanted to kind of like end on was actually, instead of me telling a personal story, was just talking about somebody that I consider as someone who's radical. And I'm not an expert in this at all. Like, you know, I'm a magazine journalist. I'm a fascinated neophyte. And I don't purport to be an expert. And I'm also not going to get into any of the kind of like arguments around Playboy and feminism and the objectification of women. I just wanted to share something which was very personal, which for me was the thing that I learned when I was doing a deep dive into this topic. And it changed my perception. You know, everyone envisions him as this, you know, 90-year-old gentleman wearing very silky pajamas. And regardless of the fact that that in its own way is very radical self-branding, it was something that really changed my opinion. And when I was researching this party, I did read a lot of the articles, a huge amount of the articles. And I read articles by Jack Kerouac, and I read interviews with Kurt Vonnegut. And like in this spread from the magazine, Eames, Mies van der Rohe, Joe Colombo, even really obscure, well, not obscure, but not mainstream things like the SF Collective Ant Farm. Like, this was all stuff that I read in copies of Vintage Playboy magazines when I was researching. And, you know, it was really interesting and fascinating and mind-changing that I saw this magazine that I had a different opinion about taking modernism mainstream. And then even just as a little aside, you know, we're talking about Dan Friedman tonight and his relationship with Keith Haring. Keith Haring actually art directed an issue of the magazine. So the other thing that I learned, that I read, that I observed, was actually a very progressive stance that kind of surprised me. So there were articles by Miles Davis in the first ever issue, Malcolm X, Dr. Martin Luther King, and they were talking about equality, and they were talking about equality in the late 50s and early 60s. I learned that Aretha Franklin played one of her first gigs ever at Playboy Club Chicago here in the city, age 19. And I read that when Playboy clubs became very popular in that era and they were franchised out, that there were clubs in the South whose owners would refuse to integrate, and Hef would buy them back at a loss to his business. And he did that because that wasn't the world that he wanted to live in. And I know we think that now, but this is like the 50s and the 60s, and I'm just in a trying to empathize kind of world. It's a different era and a different culture. From abortion to reproductive rights, and to capital punishment and the Vietnam War, I kept seeing as I was reading through every single magazine from its start through to about 1975, I saw Hef taking a stance. I mean, I even saw footage of him sending his private jet plane over to Vietnam in order to airlift out some of the orphans affected by the war-torn country. So I'm not saying that he changed the existence in there were lots of things that, you know, pros and cons for everything. You know, he stoked the fires of 60s and sexual revolution, but he also, for every centerfold he put in, would like document their stats and the inchage of each curve that they had. But what for me moved the needle for me was that by doing this event that told a Chicago-born and bred story, was that I learned that this Chicago-born and bred figurehead and editor, he used this magazine and he used this brand as a general, as a platform for what in this era and still is some very radical stances. Thank you.
Joey Stevenson, everybody. Yeah, give it up. That was wonderful. I think we all learned